Hi, everyone. Welcome, and thanks for joining us for Stars of Franchising.
Get ready for a roller coaster ride through the world of franchising as we bring you the best stories of inspiration and entrepreneurial grit and turning dreams into franchise realities.
That's right, Vinny. From emerging to global brands, we'll chat with the genius minds behind the magic, all brought to you by the Tariq Fareed Franchise Institute at Babson College. I'm Ab.
And I'm Vinny. Now, buckle up for some serious inspiration.
We're so excited and honored to have our guest in studio today, Mark Kuczynski. Welcome, Mark. Mark is founder, CEO, done so much more of Made Pro and Threshold Brands. So welcome to Babson, Mark.
It's great to be here.
Well, we're so excited. Vinny and I have had some great discussions, and we always like to start with the question of what calls you to do what you do, Mark, a little bit about your story and your why.
Yeah, thanks for asking that. I wish there was this pre-planned, thing that I had when I was younger, like I was going to start a business and franchise it, but that wasn't the case. I was an employee at Jordan Marsh. You familiar with Jordan Marsh? Yeah. It was a department store in Boston. Mm-hmm. That's the job that I got out of school, being a department manager. And after about a year and a half, I knew I didn't want to be an employee. And so I was searching for a business to start that I had very little money as well. So I was looking for a business to start that I could operate.
Right.
And I came across residential cleaning. And that's when I just made the leap to entrepreneurship. Ran that business for a number of years and stumbled across franchising. Huh. And then franchised Made Pro. And over the years, we got to about 400 odd units throughout the U.S. and Canada. And
wow,
I guess here I am. That's the short version.
Wow. In that case, you talk about starting a business. You stumbled on this. And then now we're talking of hundreds of units out there. What would you say people misunderstood the most about franchising?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things people misunderstand about franchising, so I'm not sure what's the most, but I do think people tend to think if they buy a franchise, their success is going to be guaranteed. Like, it's just, yeah. that's one of the, I don't know if it's a myth, but it's certainly, I don't think people understand that it is their business, and they themselves are, it's a system in which they operate in, but they're going to have to make it successful. Mm-hmm. It's not just going to be handed to them. So even if you buy a franchise, you're going to have to work hard and be a smart business person.
In that case, before I turn it over to Ab, if that's the case, if someone tells you, Mark, that franchising and entrepreneurship don't go together because you get a blueprint, so you just buy it and then run with it, right? Therefore, you're not an entrepreneur. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I think people define entrepreneurship differently. Mm-hmm. I would always say that there's an entrepreneur, and there's a franchise entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it was very important when we would select people to become franchisees that we made sure that they were franchise entrepreneurs, because they are slightly different, right? And if you're a pure entrepreneur, if you want to change the golden arches green, you can change them green. You can do anything you want. To operate within a franchise, you are under a sort of a control structure. And a lot of, business people in general just can't live with that. They need all the freedom. They need to change those golden arches green if they wanted to. Mm-hmm. I think there is a difference, but you do have to operate your business. You have to create a culture within your business.
Right.
You have to watch the numbers. You got to execute on what they're telling you, and that's not easy. So they're both in for a lot of ups and downs, maybe less if you're franchising because you got someone helping you.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of work, and you got to be focused on it. It's not a gimme.
And besides, you're still filled with so many uncertainties that any entrepreneur we have to deal with on a daily basis as well. So,
exactly.
Okay.
Well, I love that franchise entrepreneur term, and we've talked a lot about that in the past, Mark, how you have the guardrails maybe for some of the entrepreneurial risk, but you still have to execute. So that's great insight. Let me follow up a little bit about, you mentioned it, the franchisee selection. So we'd love to hear from your perspective, what makes a great franchisee, you know, for Made Pro or for other of your brands, or just in general, what characteristics and what should people keep their eye out for?
I mean, it does vary by brand and so forth, but in general, a lot of things that make a great franchisee make a great business person in general. But if you want to isolate it to just franchisees, you know, we do look for someone that's, besides having all the other attributes, we want to make sure they're coachable. Mm-hmm. Because in franchising, if they're not going to listen and take advice, then that can be problematic, you know, if they're on their own, because they do have to understand they're joining a system. I think one of the biggest traits is self-awareness. And this is whether you're an entrepreneur or I'll say an entrepreneur or a franchise entrepreneur, self-awareness, I think, is huge in any business, because look, no business person or business owner knows everything. Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to realize where your strengths and where your weaknesses are. So I think self-awareness is a big one.
Now, when you look at all the franchisees you've had over the years, what would you say the best one do well? Maybe top two or three things that you think they do really well, and then we're going to flip. I'm going to flip the question and ask you, if you look at franchisors in general, what would you think the best ones do so well?
Yeah, the good ones really focus on this, use the system, and then spend their time executing. I'll tell you a story. I won't give names here, but we had a franchisee, very smart gentleman, and we were in the residential cleaning business, so cleaning supplies was a piece of our business, ordering and buying cleaning supplies, although it was only 2% of our revenue went to cleaning supplies. But he spent 30, 40% of his time looking for a cheaper, you know, window cleaner.
Yeah.
So, the system's already there. I think a franchisee shouldn't spend their time tweaking the model. They should be using the model and executing on it. I think if they spent the best ones, the most successful ones, are the ones that focus on executing, building a culture, understanding their KPIs backwards and forward. If you don't understand the metrics that lead to success in your business, I mean, you're just kind of flailing around. So to me, I mean, culture, execution, and focus on KPIs, and I think you'll be successful.
And then now, so let's turn it around. If you look at franchisors, the best ones, what do you think they do so well, including you?
Yeah, when you say best, I mean, how do you define best? You
know, maybe the outstanding ones, the ones that have really been...
Because there are bigger franchisors that they might lose a greater percentage of their franchisees, where... Like Made Pro, we were very small, but we had very few close, even though we didn't grow. So how do you define best? Biggest? I'm not sure.
So let's put it this way. So the good ones out there that you've seen and are really doing a great stuff, that are making progress, that are growing, and they're keeping a hold of their franchisees and they're growing them.
The number one thing, the second is like far distant to me, and that is the organization really needs to have what I'll call a franchisee first mindset.
There it is. We've heard that before, right?
If you don't understand that your franchisee comes first, and that is that their unit economics, their profitability, their satisfaction, you know, whatever it is, that if you're not making decisions that are in their best interest, it doesn't have to be only their, it could help you as well, but if it's not in their best interest and you make those decisions, you're going to not be the best. Yeah. So those organizations that are focused on their franchisee success are usually the best.
Because if they succeed, you succeed.
Exactly. Yeah. And some organizations, I don't know why they don't get this, and how they make decisions that are not in their franchisees. Maybe it's a short-term decision to increase profits or something along the line. But that's number one to me.
Well, and what great advice for our audience, which includes many potential franchisees, and we hope a lot of this sheds light on what to look for when you're doing your due diligence in franchisors. And while that some may be the biggest and the fastest growing, if, as you state, Mark, they don't have their eye and their focus on franchisee profitability, then the pain comes later, so to speak. That's great. One thing I'd love to have you go back to, when you stated that you got into the business and as an entrepreneur and then started franchising, I'm sure you went through a lot of growing pains and made some great decisions and pivoted. Can you talk to us a little bit about those early days, Mark? How many units were you at that were company-owned even before you started franchising? And then help us learn a little bit about when you decided and what those first few days, months, and years were like.
Yeah, I had just one unit when we decided to franchise. And the only reason I even came to find out about franchising is I went to a cleaning conference. And there were other cleaning companies. One of the gentlemen I was speaking with was a franchisee of another brand. And when he was showing me his software and his marketing, I just sat to myself. And he told me about that he was a franchisee. I'm like, ours is, we have better marketing than he does.
Wow.
We have better software. Why don't I franchise? Why don't I do what? Right. And that's what sort of triggered me into franchising. To your question about like early stumbles, and yeah, there's many, because I wasn't a great student. I didn't go to a great school like Babson and study business. So I was, everything I was learning by, fits and bouts. But there were many stumbles. I think some of the earlier ones were that, you take a franchisee because they were there and they could pay you, even though they might not be the best fit for your organization.
Right.
That was one of the earlier stumbles that I would say I made. And, these are long-term partnerships that you're with people for a long time. So if you get into these 5-10 year relationships and it's not the right person, it's not good for anybody. Mm-hmm. So that would be some advice I'd give to franchisors out there is, wait, don't take that check, even if it is your first franchisee or second, you wait.
And we found, to your point, that businesses and entrepreneurs like yourself that have a great model are going to attract people that want to be franchisees. So I'm sure they were knocking on your door and saying, hey, I saw your business. We want to be one too. And it's resisting that temptation, sounds like, Mark, to not grow too fast without the infrastructure and support in place, right?
Yeah. Well, this is back in mid-90s. Mm-hmm. So there was not a lot of knocking on your door because there was really no internet. People couldn't search. So to get out the word out that you even existed was very different than today. So those first initial franchisees were hard to come by. And who is the first that person's taking a big leap of faith, right? Because you have no system. You have your own systems, but can you translate that to others? That's a big trick, and you haven't proven that yet.
And then, Mark, what were you looking for when, the few knocked on your doors, what were you looking for when you're deciding, should I go with these people or should I not? Should I pause or something?
Look, were they breathing? Were they going to join? I just wanted some, I wasn't even thinking about that. I'm like, well,
You needed to build it.
Yeah. So the first few franchises, we got lucky and we got some, but we did take on a few that I learned my lesson the hard way that it didn't work out very well, but I learned that lesson early.
From your vantage position, what do you think, what were those lessons that you said, it didn't go well, but what were your takeaway from those decisions that didn't go well?
Yeah, to take your time and really explain the business. You want the person that's joining, you want to give them enough real information so that they can make a good decision for themselves. I always looked at it wasn't my decision whether you were going to join Made Pro or one of our brands.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to share the information, the real information. And some people, the good and the bad, a lot of franchisors don't do that. Mm-hmm. And if I share it all, then you'll make a good decision for yourself. That was sort of the position that we took versus sell, sell, sell. We never had any of our franchise developers selling. Huh. It was like explaining the real deal. Mm-hmm. And if you want to join, then it would be a good fit. And we found out that was sort of the best way to decide.
Now, so Mark, if you have a room filled with people who are thinking of going into becoming franchisees or even franchisors, what advice would you give them?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of advice. I mean, I could sit here for days.
Yeah.
One, I think I would explain to them that they're the difference between being an entrepreneur, and a franchise entrepreneur. So mm-hmm. they know really the framework of what they're getting into. Right? Mm-hmm. And once they understood that, then I would focus them in on industry, because different industries provide different, I'll say, business aspects. Like residential cleaning is a weekday business. Mm-hmm. Home healthcare might be a 7-day night business. Right. Do you want that? Do you want a restaurant? Is that a passion for you? Do you want inventory in your business? Like, mm-hmm. So I'd really focus on letting them understand what industry are they going into. And then I would have them, when they actually found the franchise, I would have them speak to a lot of franchisees, maybe not a lot, at least five mm-hmm. existing franchisees, and have deep conversations with them. You know, what are they like? What's their day to day? How much money do they spend? What are they making? Because the franchisor often can't tell you. And even in the item 19, you can fudge data. Mm-hmm. You know, all franchisors make their data look as good as they can make mm-hmm. them. So you really have to talk with the franchisees. And not only the existing franchisees, in the franchise disclosure document, they'll list all the previous franchisees right. that have left right. the system. I would call a few of those right. folks as well and do it randomly. Don't take the list from the franchisor. Just kind of go yeah. throw a couple darts and call people up and really find out. And then it not only will help you make a decision, but you'll make some friends along the way. Yeah. So if you do decide to join, yeah. right, you've got some built-in mentors for you.
Right. Okay. Any other advice? Any other advice apart from these two that you give? Apart from doing your due diligence, going out to talk to people, is there anything that's maybe it comes to your mind that you...
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of... it does go on and on. There's a lot to it. So it's hard in a mm-hmm. podcast to... But, you know, you want to make sure that the legal terms and mm-hmm. the FDD are, yeah. I'll say, franchisee friendly. Mm-hmm. A lot of, you know, private equity firms and larger corporations or bigger you know, as they grow, their legal terms get a little tighter. And I'll give you an example of something that we used to have in our franchise agreement that most don't. We called it the 90-day out clause. Mm-hmm. That if you did want to shut your business down for whatever reason, we had a gentleman that started a Made Pro, and within 6 months, his wife and his son were diagnosed with cancer, and he's like, "I need to right. get out." You know, we're going to lock him into 5 or 10 year agreement where you're going to pay a minimum royalty or things yeah. of that nature. And yes, some franchisors can do that out of the goodness of your heart, but you want a legal agreement to follow suit. So that's an important thing. Another thing I think is going on in the franchise world I don't agree with, and that is limiting the renewal terms. Mm-hmm. We used to have unlimited renewal terms. You know, as long as you weren't in default of your agreement, yeah. you could renew. Now people are saying, you know, you can renew twice. Mm-hmm. You build a business, 5 year, 10 year.
Yeah.
What happens in 5, 10, 20 years after you've built this business, it's up to them whether you can renew it or not.
Yeah.
Those are those type of things. So I would really review, I would hire an attorney, a franchise attorney, yeah. not just an attorney.
Right.
A franchise attorney to review the legal, make sure you understand what you're getting into.
Okay.
That's important. So once you've decided you like the culture, you like the business, you know, before you sign on the dotted line, you know,
okay.
get a franchise attorney to review.
That's all great advice, and Mark references the franchise disclosure document, and the devil is in details, right? And those are two great examples of terms to keep your eye out for, which I hadn't thought of, especially if you are doing really, really well, and maybe the franchisor brand has changed ownership, and they want to go in a different direction, and you lose that right. So two great items there, and do your due diligence. And the fit is important, too. It's like a marriage, we've heard people say, and a partnership. So that's great stuff. I'd like to pivot a little bit to innovation. So within the guardrails of franchising as an a franchise entrepreneur and following the system. We've had some guests and talked a little bit on, and love your perspective on maybe some innovation that happened during the pandemic that challenged the business model, or some of your best franchisees. Did they come up with some great ideas that were implemented in the system?
That's a great question. In franchising, it is interesting that if your system is so tight, where does innovation come from?
Yeah.
If the franchisees can't, you know, so we always considered ourselves to be franchisee flexible.
Mm-hmm.
And people would always hear the word flexible. How do you franchise or how do you, yeah. And so we would give people some latitude to make decisions and try some things and so forth. So we wanted innovation as much as we could have it in our industry to come from franchisees, because we weren't, we didn't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
But we did get some pretty good, you know, innovations that came, you know, out of our franchisees, and we incorporated them and we gave them credit for it, right? Because we didn't need to take it. Over the pandemic, I mean, obviously that was a really rough spot, especially when you're a self-owned brand. But you, I don't know if this is any different from any other business, but you really learn how to operate with not connecting with people.
Yeah.
Being remote. And even in cleaning, people would come in and get their supplies. We'd give them the supplies. We'd take their supplies from the previous day and we'd swap that. You know, they'd just pull up and they'd pop their trunk and we'd do, like, that's very simple for a residential cleaning service. But luckily we had a mobile app for employees already built. And so we were kind of ahead of the curve and we'd already had built in integrated texting and a lot of, you know, remote dispatching and things of that nature. So we were kind of ahead of the curve on that, but a lot of innovation that hit franchising and definitely accelerated things.
Great.
So, Mark, during the pandemic, I guess you had a lot of back and forth, collaboration with your franchisees. Have you done anything to sort of institutionalize all those collaborative efforts? In other words, do you have anything in place to just, maybe you meet on a regular basis, maybe quarterly or two times a year.
We used to have a lot of in-person regional meetings, and obviously that shifted to
virtual.
Virtual. And you know, we just continued it because people loved it so much. We didn't stop. We probably reduced the in-person meetings.
I see.
But we definitely increased the virtual. That stayed in place. You know, we added a lot of. Our mobile app was good, but it, of course, got better because when you're forced to not show up, you would add features a lot faster than you would otherwise.
Right.
So a lot of once you add something to your tech stack, it stays there.
Mm-hmm. So out of curiosity, could you tell us maybe what goes on in that meeting, for instance? You have an agenda, or they bring their agenda, or how do you decide what you're going to talk on, what you're going to speak on that day? The meeting, those conferences.
MadePro University?
Voila.
Or our conferences, our annual conferences.
When you bring all your franchisees together.
Annual conferences. We had an interesting take on the annual. Yeah. First of all, we didn't do it annually. We did it every 18 months.
Okay.
We felt like it's a lot of work to put those things together. And and our staff, I didn't want them distracted. Like, as soon as you finish one, you got to roll into starting the other one.
Right.
And we weren't that large of a franchisor to have like a separate conference team. So we went with 18 months, and I think our franchisees like that cadence because they got to, you know, relax, come back, you know, take a little bit more time. But we tried to come up with a lot of, like, what's the new next best thing? And we'd always want to deliver that, but what was always the most important is the blocking and tackling of the business, the execution of the core business. How you're treating your employees, how you're scheduling for us, what tools you're using, did you know how to use the technology? The showing them the shiny new thing that you just developed, you want to do that because that's exciting.
Yeah.
But the predominant push should be doing all the things that you should be doing correctly. Yeah. Like that kind of gets lost.
Right.
And then, of course, it's all about culture.
Yeah.
So when you have all your franchises together, what are they doing to connect and get along? If it's just sitting in conferences the whole time, then you lose that that dynamic, because it's what you're doing the other 360 days of the year you know, the connection, the sharing, the mentoring that really builds. So, yeah, those conventions are, they're a lot of fun, they're a lot of work. But if you focus on culture, connection, blocking and tackling, and you do a little bit of the sizzle, you know, I think you'll be good.
Interesting. So Mark, again, before up, comes on again, let's talk about social issues, diversity, equity, and inclusion. In your type of business, you run a business where the model is such that whether you like it or not, it's about getting local communities involved. The franchisees said they are local people, mm-hmm. and they hire people from their vicinity. So what have you seen over the past few years, even though it's just now that people are talking about the need to be more inclusive, to be more diverse? I guess this is something that you started working in from day one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know. I gave it much thought. You know, I never gave it much thought. When there were the riots that happened recently, a few years back, and everybody was talking about race and diversity and so forth. Our HR person did a survey, you know, found out all the, you know, how many people this race and that race that we had. And
as employees and franchisees.
Employees and franchisees. And they said, we don't have enough white people. You know, that was the result. Like, you know, and what we didn't even do, it was, you know, just, I think just being nice and just being fair and just, if you know, it wasn't ever really a thing on our mind, you know.
I see.
So we just treated everybody equally, you know. If you could do the job, great, do it, you know. We didn't care what you look like, how tall you were, how short you were, whatever, you know, whether you wore glasses or not, you know. It just, you know, so you know. But as a company, we did do a lot to give back. We started a 501c3 called Made Pro Cares. One of the things I put together to keep the culture really strong at our organization was something called these adventure trips. So where we would have our franchisees together for these seminars every 18 months. The opposite 9 months. So every 18 months, we'd have a convention, and every 18 months, we'd have a adventure trip. We would go places like Belize, Peru, went to Croatia. We sailed around the Caribbean. We did a number of these, and any franchisee can go. It wasn't just the top 10. Mm-hmm. I didn't like having the
top performers.
They could go and buy their own trip, right? Huh. It was anybody that wanted to go, all inclusive. And we went to Belize, and somebody on my team said, "Hey, if we're going to go to Belize and we're going to have fun there, let's call and maybe there's a orphanage or a children's home we could support." So we went to this children's home. They had 30 children, and everybody that went sort of picked out a child that they would find out what they liked and bring some things for them, you know, whether it was clothes or books. And we were there for 2 hours, then we left. And after that, we all sat back and said, "That was great, but now we're gone.
Right?
How do we keep this going?" And so we set up this 501c3 called Made Pro Cares, and we helped that orphanage and a few others. And, you know, gave back, visited, worked at the orphanages, and it was great. You know, they need a lot of help, particularly in some of those countries. Wow. So it was a lot of fun. And a lot of our franchisees would go with us, and we would stay there, and talking about building connection and culture. Wow. So it was good for business, and it was good for the soul, if you will.
Wow.
Yeah, and that kind of points back to the attributes of some of the franchisors that do well, that is the franchisees evaluate who they want to partner with. That culture is important. Talk to the franchisees in the system, and you've talked a lot about the reliance on each other in franchisee systems, right? So it sounds like building that culture, but also your franchisees need to put the effort in to count on each other. Is that right?
Oh, to help they each do other? They yeah. do it's I want to say it's work for them. It should be pleasurable to meet a fellow
franchisee.
If they're, you know, if you've let the right ones in, and you know everybody's nice and people are caring and willing to share, you know, then it's a fantastic way and improves your business. Just kind of like a family. Like you know, I have a 17-year-old son. Sometimes he doesn't want to listen to me, but he'll listen to his peers, right? Yeah. So in franchising, it's the same. Like you can say, do this, but when your fellow franchisees say, "Hey, this is working.
It's working.
Right. You're going to do it." So it helps the system overall,
right.
And it spreads out the the work, the support work.
Right.
Mark, if you look back, I mean, these years, decades, you've been doing this. What is one thing that franchising taught you that you feel everyone should at some point, in one way or the other, learn that as well?
Well, since I've been in franchising pretty much my whole adult life, I mean, it's taught me probably every lesson I've had, the good ones and the bad ones. I don't know, is there one thing? I do think that the social fabric is in building a high trust culture is important in life and in franchising. Yeah. I mean, when people connect, and that's why we did these adventure trips, when they connect outside of work and not just go to a bar for a drink for an hour, you know, when you travel with people, right. I guess if it was one thing, if you travel with people, you bond with them unlike anything else. So that's by my one lesson that I've really taken away.
Okay.
So go on trip. Maybe you can do that at Bath. You guys take faculty away to Belize or something.
And then the next question I'm going to add with a piggyback on that is to ask you that is there something you would do differently and why? If you look in your rearview mirror.
I don't know. I mean, you make a lot of mistakes over time in business. You're making decisions multiple times a day. So there's decisions I would have made but differently, I don't really know. I mean, so one of the things we did was we opened up additional brands. So I had Made Pro, like and then we opened up a mosquito and tick control brand, and we opened up a window cleaning brand. Mm-hmm. I think I would have I might have purchased a brand that or bought a company that had been in existence for a number of years first, and got a little further along than starting it.
Another de novo brand.
Yeah. I would have. I may have bought either a small.
So rather than building something organically.
Building it organically is fine. I think it would have sped things up.
Okay.
And we probably would have made, less mistakes early on. That probably would have helped. If I was to give you one, that would have been.
Interesting.
And then for any insights into managing multiple brands, either for franchisees considering joining a family of brands, what to expect or?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of pros and cons to it, but running it, it's at minimum 10 times harder than a single brand. Yeah. When you add your second brand, it's many, many times more difficult because you can lose your focus, right? You have to organize your business distinctly different than you would under, because when people have focus, right, they can just do a lot better. But if the head of marketing now has five brands. You know, at some point you have to grow, so every brand has their own head of marketing.
Yeah.
But that takes time. So it's a lot. It's a lot of work. But there are benefits to it. You have more revenue, more
synergies,
right? A franchisee in one brand can open up, already knows the system. You may have the same software system. You may have the same marketing techniques. You may have the same business coach that you can rely on. So there are pros and cons, like there are with anything in life. But
so, Mark, if you look at trends in the world today, maybe technologic or social, or regulatory, name it, is there a trend that you think will shape the future of franchising and the franchising model as we know it today?
I mean, the biggest trend that I see going on right now is the private equity ownership of brands. I mean, very few brands are now like independently owned other than the smaller ones. Mm-hmm. There's very few larger brands that are getting purchased. And I think what that's doing to franchising is, right, it's corporatizing it, meaning some of those more stringent terms are going in. Mm-hmm. Right, as businesses get bigger, they have to put in more controls, which they do naturally. This is inside and outside of franchising. Mm-hmm. And so that is happening within the franchising world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so less flexibility to the franchisor.
I see.
I mean, excuse me, less flexibility to the franchisee. You know, things are more like tighter controlled. So I think that is a trend that's been happening for many, many years, and it's probably going to continue.
I see.
Well, great stuff, Mark. We really appreciate your time today. Lots of great lessons from an entrepreneur who started by launching a business in cleaning to deciding to franchise to scaling to over 400 units and multiple brands owned by private equity. So lots of great life lessons. We appreciate your time in studio today, Mark, and best wishes.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Stars of Franchising.
Stars of Franchising was produced at Babson College, engineered by Travis Gray. Karen Soa is our guest coordinator, and music by Ralph Taylor.
If you like Stars of Franchising, be sure to review us wherever you get your podcasts and spread the word and share these stories any way you can.